326 of the Survival Podcast. It's a Wednesday. You guys know what that means after 16 plus years. That means it's time for an interview. And the person I have on today, I'm really stoked about this interview. This is Deb Brown, and she is the co-founder, at least if not the founder, of Savior.Town and BuildingPossibility.com. I got this guest app about a month ago, I guess, maybe 6 weeks ago, something in that range. And this really hits home for me. There's an initiative that I'm working on that this is not the same as, but it's in the same wheelhouse. And so I was really excited. But as I always do when I get a guest app in, I always try to find that person speaking somewhere so that I don't get somebody on that can write really good but you know can't talk or something. I found a TEDx by Deb, and this lady's fire. I became more excited about getting her on after listening to her talk about helping to revitalize the town. She took a job in with the Chamber of Commerce, I believe it was, and I actually circulated that TEDx talk of hers today when I promoted the show. I was so impressed by it. And what we're going to be talking about here is restoring these towns all over the country. And this immediately brought me back to one of my favorite stories with my buddy David. We went up to Nicole's place in Tennessee when she did her first ever workshop. And on the way back, we got to that place where, like, your eyes are burning and we need to stop. And we found this town in Arkansas. I can't even remember what it's called, but it was like going through a time portal. It had this dive bar that in the hotel that you didn't even, it was like a speakeasy. You had to, somebody had to tell you how to find it. And all the locals were there. And it was like 1987 when we walked in, the music, the look, everything. But we drove around the town once we kind of got our bearings, and it was like somebody pulled a plug. You could tell there used to be something there. There was a warehouse area that was, you know, it would put an Amazon warehouse to shame. It was multiple warehouses, though, and it was completely destroyed. And I've seen other places like this. Dorothy and I took a trip to Florida 1 year. We drove, and we drove through parts of Louisiana and Arkansas with town after town of this same model where it was, again, like somebody pulled the plug and everything just drained out of it. And you could tell there used to really be something here. And so I look at that as an asset. I look at one of the pictures from Deb's TED Talk where she shows what I think was a town in Missouri or Mississippi did with just one building and said, imagine the possibilities of this building. My wife and I looked at that picture today, and what I said to her is, you can't build that building today. You can't afford to build that building today. We build strip malls today, and there is so much in these towns, there's so much heart, there's so much beauty waiting to be restored. What if you can do it? What if I told you one of the keys to that is simply to tell people that it's there, not to try to hide your problems, but to advertise your opportunities? That's what hooked me when I saw what Deb was talking about. I'll have her on in just a moment. Before we do that, can we go ahead and talk about our two sponsors of the day today? Sponsor day number one today is Above Phone. Above Phone is how you can take back your tech from the big tech companies. Yeah, it's an Android phone, but it had the operating systems designed to spy on you, just rip right out of it, replaced with something called Graphene. You have your own private app marketplace where you can install apps that don't spy on you. The operating system will keep your carrier from spying on you. And I know what you're thinking. Well, there's two problems with this, Jack. One, I'm a technophobe. And two, I have these one or two apps I have to use. If they're not available with a similar app in the private app store, you can put that app you have to use in a jail cell. It comes out, it does what it does, and when you ain't using it, you put it back in there and it can't bother you no more and it can't tell on you no more and report your data anymore. As far as the technophobe thing, first of all, it ain't that hard. If you can use an iPhone or an Android phone, Google Play, all that, you can do this. But they do give you an Above Phone expert along with your phone for a one-hour consultation of transferring over. And if you're a member of my member support brigade, you get $75 off any phone at abovephone.com. Next up today, the Berkey water filters that are available at usaberkeyfilters.com from Jeff Gleason. Jeff's been sponsoring this show since 2011. That's been a while. Water is life. You need to have the freshest, purest water you can get. And one thing I always bring up when I talk about Berkey, when you get that boil water advisory from your local government that tells you, hey, something's wrong with your water, you should be boiling, usually there's been a problem for a few days to a week or more. Enough people show up at an ER, finally they kind of piece it all together, Sherlock Holmes it, and figure out, hey, something's wrong with the water, which means everybody's been drinking it for that entire lag. And then, you know, there's things in your water that you'd prefer not to be there. And like me, I'm on a well, so I don't worry about any of that. But that means if my well gets contaminated in some way, I don't know it. With Berkey, I just don't worry about it. I get the best taste in water there is, the lowest cost per gallon of production. There ain't no moving parts. It can't break, and it looks beautiful. Check out Jeff the Berkey Guy, Gleason at usaberkeyfilters.com, and he also does a discount for my members. With that, let's bring Deb on. Deb, welcome to the Survival Podcast.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. And you know what? I want to talk about that above-ground phone thing. That sounds really interesting. So I have to make a comment because it's what I do.
Okay.
If you are a technophobe and you're afraid to do this, what you have to do is gather your crowd, get with a bunch of people that might already be using it and let them show you. You know, how hard would that be, right?
Yep.
Especially in today's age, we're getting spied on everywhere. That's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you, if you're in this audience, I guarantee you there's people in the Telegram community that will help you if you don't know what you're doing. So we definitely have that community of people. But like I said, the cool thing about them, they really do. You get your phone and you set up your time and you call them, and then they walk you through converting over down to flipping your SIM card from your legacy phone into your above phone.
Excellent.
So it's a pretty cool company. Pretty cool way to take your power back. And I think a lot of what you're doing is about, you know, communities taking their power back. Can you tell us a little bit about, before we get into this topic in of itself, how did you become this person leading this charge? Like, before you had the job that led to this, what was your professional background, and how did you end up even in this space?
So I'm not young, first of all, and I grew up on a farm, so I know about hard work. And then went to college, ended up in Chicago, raised a family there, went to North Carolina. I have bartended. I have sold Ginsu knives. I've done foreign casualty insurance. I mean, I've done a whole wealth of things. And the consistent thing through it was my ability to listen, to hear what people really want, and then talk about whatever it is I'm promoting or working on. You know, we listen to talk. Right. So if you're saying something, I'm listening. Well, what am I going to say back? What am I going to say back? And that's not the right way to listen. You should listen to hear so that you can really determine what it is you need help with or want help with. So my dad had a heart attack, and that's when I came back to Iowa. So I was living in this town of 4,000 people, volunteered at the chamber there, ended up, they hired me to do marketing. And when this other position as a director came open, I took it. I had never led a chamber before, but I made my mind up. This is all about community and the people that live there. We have to stop thinking, oh, poor me, and start thinking, look at the possibilities. Oh, my God, there's so much you can do. People forget, you know, when you say, well, the city ought to do that, the city ought to do this. We forget we are the city. What we want matters. We have a say in things. And you don't need permission to do 99% of the things you want to do. Don't, you know, let the city do what it is they do. They run the books, they fix the infrastructure, they make sure you have water, you know, that stuff they do. But if you want art in your community, then figure out how to get art in your community. Go paint a mural on the side of a building. For example, I own a building, I'm going to paint a mural on the side of it. Can't tell you not to.
Yeah, so they can tell you not to do it to somebody else's building, but not your own, or not right. One that the owner said, I want a mural on my building and I'm commissioning it.
Yep, definitely. And when I drove over there for my interview, I counted 14 empty buildings downtown. 14. That's crazy.
Town and this ain't 8, a big 000. Town either, right? I mean,
8,000 people in that town. And I knew if I got the job, they were going to tell me I had to figure out how to fill those buildings. You know, most people just ignore the empty buildings, drive right past it. I don't see it. Locals that live there. or they think in their head, I really need to talk to him because he should be doing better with his building. But they never talk to them. Well, I decided let's do a tour of empty buildings because that made sense. Let's show them off. Oh, my God. Wow. Thanks, Jeffrey. I didn't know I got to see Commons, too. That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we did a tour of empty buildings. I didn't know I couldn't do that in a month's time, but we did. You know, there's some benefit in not knowing that you can do things, right, when you're new.
Yeah.
In 18 months, there were 12 buildings on the tour. In 18 months, 10 of those buildings were filled in a year and a half. And the real secret, besides showing it off, is we just kept talking about it. I went to the guys at the coffee shop, and you know who they are, right? The Committee of Negativity. There you go.
It ain't never going to happen. I'm telling you, I've been here since 1948, and it ain't never going to happen. I grew up in a coal town in rural Pennsylvania.
So you know. So
I know,
you know
exactly what you mean. But those guys in my town, though, they were at the bar because there was a bar. That's one thing there was. A bar about as big as my office.
So they're just crammed in there. Yeah, I gotcha.
Old coal miners and old carpenters and stuff like that.
So I went and I sat with them and listened a little bit, and one fellow said, "What are you doing? You think you can save those empty buildings?" I'm like, "I don't know. I think that they have possibility, but let me ask you something." He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Doesn't your daughter live in the state capital?" And he kind of went back and he goes, "Yeah." I'm like, "How many grandkids you got?" And he started talking about his grandkids and how excited he was. And then I hit him. I said, "What would it be like if she could come back home with her family and have her own business here in one of those empty buildings? What would that be like for you?" He got it. You can see the light bulb going on above his head. And that really is what it is. You got to find the motivation that people want to fill those buildings. And for him, he went and told everybody he knew, "You got to come to this tour. Oh, my God. Have you seen this building? Blah, blah, blah." I mean, he really did help spread the word. There are some people that'll never be nice. But, oh, well. You know, you can't win over everybody, and you shouldn't waste your time doing that. Work with the willing.
You know, you have a real, like, this is a sales technique. Like, my background's in corporate sales and corporate marketing. And what you want to do when you're trying to make a deal with, like, a big company, and you have to think of a town as an 8,000-person company in some ways, right? Mm-hmm. You want to find key decision makers, and if you can, you want to find the guy that's always against as much as possible, and if you win him over, everybody just comes along. If you can find that one crusty old coal miner or farmer or whatever, and he says, "Man, you got to look at this," all of a sudden, not like you said, there's no way you get rid of all the negativity, but if you can get 50, 60, 70% of people in at least let's give this a chance, then you have a lot of momentum at that point.
Well, the numbers are even lower than that. I believe it's 27%.
Okay.
But if you can convince 27%, then the rest will follow towards that majority. And people don't want to be the first to do anything. So somebody's got to start it. Find that person that will absolutely start it. And those people looking over the fence are going to eventually say, "I should be helping you. I should be over there. I want that too." I don't know that you have to find the key decision makers to begin. I think you just have to find the people that think like you and want to do the things you want to do. That's called gathering your crowd around a big idea. So what is your big idea? So what do you want in your town? Let's go through the idea-friendly method. Let me walk you through it.
Before you start, I love that. That's where I was going next anyway. I see this repeated over and over. In your website, on your guest app, my notes about you, idea friendly. That sounds like, hey, please bring us what you, let's open it up. Like, it's kind of the old talking stick thing. Let's hear from everybody.
Yep. That actually is what it is. You know, the Iowa State University did a 20-year study on communities in 99 towns in the state of Iowa. There happen to be 99 counties. I'm thinking they hit each county. And, you know, people had good things happen, bad things, storms came in. I mean, all kinds of different things happened. And what they found, that the towns that were going to survive and thrive were the ones that were open to new ideas and letting new people in the town help out. So being open to new ideas, there's your idea friendly. They don't have to be huge, gigantic ideas. You know, maybe you want, so tell me what you want in your town. Let's see how good I am today. So, what would you like to see in your town, you personally?
So I actually live not in a town.
Okay.
I live in very rural area. And then like, if I drive south here, I'm not really in a town. I'm in a city.
In your county, what would you like to see?
In my county, I think Whitehall or something. What I'd like to actually do is one of these smaller towns, that smaller town feel. I would actually like to build in the center of that town, kind of as a hub, it's going to go out there a little bit, a very innovative type of greenhouse system to produce local food for that town to provide jobs. And I'd like to integrate into that things like a cafe and things where people can actually go inside where the food's grown and that their revenue that they're contributing, probably do it on a member's method to get around some of the regulatory crap, actually help fund the operation, at least initially. And now you have this social hub that's also providing jobs and resources for the town. That's something I'd like to build.
So you're talking about a green maker space, actually, is what you're talking about. How many other people do you know, friends, family, associates, that would be interested in talking about that?
I know, honestly, tens of thousands of people. They're just not here.
Okay.
They're in my wider community. So I have a different asset to leverage than a lot of people might.
Yeah, you do. So let's look at a 100-mile radius. You don't have to give me a number. But what I would like you to do, invite them over to your house or to the bar for a drink or to the coffee shop for a cup of coffee. It's called gathering your crowd. Big idea, just for lack of time. Yeah. Green makerspace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And bring everybody over and say, here's my idea. What do you think about it? And people will either get excited and start building off of that. Somebody might say it's a sucky idea.
Sure.
And you can thank them for coming and ask them to leave. I mean, that's what I would do. Hey, we're going to do this, so you don't have to stay. See,
thanks for coming. There's the door.
Yep, definitely. And then that's called gathering your crowd, people that think like you.
Awesome.
Then you have to think about taking some small steps. How could you test or try that idea out on a very small scale? What is the smallest possible way you could try that out?
I mean, I would have already done the smallest way, which would be develop systems that grow food within a greenhouse in the model that you wanted to do.
Okay, so
that's
what you would personally do.
Yeah.
I would recommend that people that crowd with you, why don't you guys go to the farmer's market and sell some of that stuff you grew?
Okay.
Get out there, showcase your work, start talking about what it is you're doing. What happens when you take those smaller steps is it's easier to fail and course correct.
Okay.
When you do those great big steps and get lots of money invested, you can't fail. And when you do, it's awful. So by doing the smaller steps, it's so much easier. Maybe the farmer's market didn't work, but setting up a booth on the outskirts of town did, so whatever adjustments you need to do. And then you also want to build connections. And this is the part you may not like, but somebody's going to talk to one of the city council people to make sure you can do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can we do this? I always recommend do not go to the city council meeting. Call one of them up and invite them out for a beer and have a conversation. The time to go to the city council is after you've got some successful steps under your belt. And you can just show up and say, hey, we're here to tell you what we're working on. We don't need your help. We don't need your money. But we thought you might be interested. City council people, the officials get asked for money all the time. And frankly, they don't really have it, or they don't have it for projects that you and I like.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a very non-government person. I refer to the government generally as the department of making you sad. But I understand the importance of working within those frameworks to get things like this done, especially in the town. I mean, one of the reasons I live where I live, I can do anything I want. There's literally, I don't even have a building code where I live. Texas is a weird state, and if you are unincorporated, until you start cooking meth in your backyard, the sheriff's not even coming. I mean, right. So they don't care at all. But when you start moving into towns, people, a lot of times change is something that people are really afraid of because, well, you know, what if it messes things up or whatever? And to me, some of these places, like, really, like your population is just in this terminal decline. Where I grew up, we had a classic case of what's referred to in immigration as brain drain. All the people that were mobile that had opportunity or could create opportunity, even if they didn't have money, they had enough intelligence and enough ambition, left. And so back in the 80s when I was a kid there, it was a pretty cool place because the elderly population kept the culture that made it strong. And as they died off, now, unfortunately, the place I'm from is called Pottsville. I've had people that still live up there tell me you can't walk down Main Street without walking by three people selling heroin, including across the street from the police station. And to me, a town that's in that state of decay, what do you think can go wrong that hasn't gone wrong? You know what I mean? Like, that's like, what do you have to lose by letting somebody else take their money, their time, their talent, their effort, and their resources and try to make things better? Right. And I'm probably not the person to make that case in front of a council, but that would be the framework of it to me anyway.
I got you. And you know what? Drugs are an awful thing.
They're cancer in these communities.
An awful conversation. Yeah, and we see it all the time. However, let's talk brain drain because I want to touch on that.
Yeah.
Ben Winchester is a sociologist up at the University of Minnesota. He's worth looking into. You like what I talk about? You'll love Ben. It says there is, it's Ben Winchester.
Okay.
He says it's not brain drain. We actually have a brain gain. What happens is the high school students, when they leave, they have a big party, right? Everybody knows they're leaving. They're going to town. But when these folks are coming back, we don't know it. They don't all come back at the same time.
Oh.
And so many of them are working remotely, are working on their dad's farm and taking that over. I mean, those places that you don't see them. So the goal has got to be, how do you find these people? How do you get them? How do you move them from that person that's got his own business making widgets because he had a brilliant idea and he's doing it in his garage. And I know a guy like that. How do you get him into a small maker space or a small industrial kind of location with retail in the front? Well, you got to go find him first. And there's ways. I mean, you can look online, Etsy, Kickstarter, all of those places where people are selling stuff and doing cool things. And you'll find some of the entrepreneurs in your community.
Well, I think that's a huge piece of it, is just getting those people together.
Yeah.
One of the things that I lost when I walked away from corporate America, and by the time I did that, I was running my own group of companies, is I lost that interaction on a daily basis with other innovators and thinkers and entrepreneurs, where you're not even really working on the same thing, but you're just working in proximity to one another, and you get pissed off and say, like, oh, this isn't working, and they say, what's going on? And they give you an idea, and it's not even really a good idea, but it's a piece of a good idea, and then you take a piece out of that and go, thanks a lot, Bill, and all of a sudden you're off, and like that hopefully goes both directions. And that lifts everybody's performance. And I think if you can start bringing those people together, and I know you work for chambers, so don't take what I'm about to say the wrong way, but so many people at a chamber of commerce meeting just feel like, I'm out here to sell a thing. And if I can't get any business out of this today, then what am I doing here? And I've also been to some of the kind of satellite cities around Dallas, which are still pretty big places like Plano or whatever. And it just felt like you kicked a table and like 20 insurance people came out from underneath it. And you kicked another table and 47 real estate agents came out. And they were very monolithic in that way. And they weren't really about innovation. Now, during the tech boom, there's a place called Richardson that had a technology business council. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Then trying to make that fit into more small town feel where you actually have the innovators coming together to bring everything up.
Yeah, Denison did that same kind of thing too. They rehabbed their downtown in Texas, and it was phenomenal. So the thing for me is I'm working in small towns. Our sweet spot is under 10,000 people. Having said that, we've worked in 50,000 size communities, right?
Yeah.
It's okay to think differently. So that insurance agent that's a chamber member,
yeah,
has been told to think you are going to give X amount of dollars to promote your business, and hopefully you'll get some new clients out of that, right?
Yep.
So what does he want to do? Maybe that's not what he wants to do. If
often
your exec director is asking, so what is it that you need for your business? What do you need for your business? And then you'll have that conversation. Okay, let's figure out how to make that happen.
Mm.
So maybe you'd be good at speaking about, I know a lawyer that spoke about people dying and what you have to do to be prepared to die. Perfect in a small town. And he got a lot of business out of it because he knew what he was talking about. And he did it at a funeral home. I mean, I love it, right?
Yeah.
Get out of the boardrooms, get out of the traditional places to do, and get out there and do some work. Businesses that belong in a small community and belong to the chamber are there because they want to support their community. It's a case of when the tide rises, all boats rise, right? So if you are not helping your community, you're going to sink too. Everybody should do something to support their community. As simple as maybe going on Facebook and posting a true story that you heard, a good story, right? To investing your money, the insurance agent that has money that he's got to spend, how can he invest that? How can you help him invest that? So for you and your makerspace, wouldn't, a couple thousand dollars be worth a poster in the window, right? Sure, of course it would. From the local insurance agent.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of those people that are starting new businesses have got to have insurance. How can he help you in your efforts? Not hard push. Just, come on, let's give this a shot. Let me tell you about the kind of insurance you might qualify or that you might need. And here's why.
And that is a good insurance agent. Right. That's a good insurance agent.
But the good ones stay around. The bad ones go. Don't worry about the bad ones. Let them go.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you maybe give us an example of where folks have used this idea-friendly method and kind of like walk us through how? Because I think when people hear the story of the restoration of the place, then they can start to visualize it and we can get out of the negative vein that many people are in with it.
I wrote a book and I went through before our call and marked a couple of the pages because I knew you were going to ask me about that. Jackson County. I really should know the community, shouldn't I? In Appalachia, Jackson County, Kentucky. Sorry. In Appalachia. Don't have a whole lot there, right? But they do have some amazing artists. So I went out there. They brought me to town to talk about how can we do stuff and get this community really rolling. And the first thing we did was we brought everybody to this historic site and sat down. And we went around the room and I asked people. I didn't talk. I made them talk.
Sure.
And I asked them, so what is it that you want? And they looked at me like I had three heads. And I'm like, no, really, I want to know what you want. This is not about me telling you what to do. Let's figure out what you want and get it done. So a woman named Kathy says to me, I have ATV and I think another four-wheeler, that what I'd like to do is rent them out to tourists because we have people that come here and want to go up in the mountains and stuff. I'm like, that sounds like a great idea. Why aren't you doing it? She goes, well, I just have those two things. One woman stood up and said, you know what? I have a canoe and you can use it. I don't care. I never use it. Another person said, well, I can help you with that. I have these three things. In 10 minutes, she had 10 different things that she could use to start her business. Now, think about that. If she'd had to buy that product, she couldn't do it.
Hmm.
But because a group of people got together and were talking about the things they wanted, and it's a community that helps each other, this is how well it worked. And she's doing that, by the way. She did start renting her stuff out. And if you've never been to Jackson, you want to go. Jackson County. It's great.
I think it's amazing when you share a vision that how many people will help you, whether it's leasing you equipment inexpensively where you can never afford it. Maybe you can afford it, but you wouldn't pass the credit check because you're brand new or something, or outright gifts. This microphone right here that I use as a backup mic, this microphone is 15 years old. Because one of my listeners got tired of the audio quality in my early days and sent me this microphone. Joel Salatin, who's probably the most famous farmer in the world at this point, when he was getting started out, he couldn't get food to market, and somebody just gave him a busted up old Cadillac because they're like, I want you to be around. I don't want you to go away. But if they hadn't known that he had a problem, they would have been like, he's got a big old farm. Well, what he had was the farm that still belonged to his parents at the time. He really didn't own anything, and he was trying to change the way they did things, and he was in this flux period, and he was dead broke. And it's amazing what people will do when they know that you are trying to do something positive and that they can help. It's the difference between you see somebody sitting on the hood of their car with a cell phone in their hand, you generally don't stop because they've got it worked out. But if you see somebody pushing a car, you usually like, hey, I'm going to help this person because I see they're trying to get something done here.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. Battle Mountain, Nevada. That's another story. I was trying to remember, where was I going? So we're doing some 6-month contract out there with Battle Mountain, helping them with beautification of the county. Now, this is mining country. Beautiful. Lots of hunting, mining, that kind of stuff. And they have a very active county commission. They don't have a city group. Their county runs the area. So we went in and we were talking with the city people, and they're telling me, oh, well, we're doing this, Deb, and we're doing this, and we're doing this. I'm like, wait a minute. Nobody knows that. I just talked to 40 people who want all those things, and you've not told your story. We need to hear your story. Well, come to find out, they thought the idea of having a place where, like a tool library is what it's called, where you could go and borrow tools. Because one of their problems is they wanted to beautify people's yards and help them mow the grass and pull weeds and that kind of stuff, right? So they loved the idea of the tool library. But the head of the county commission says, Deb, you know, we have a business here that rents those tools out now. What if the county gave each family, $300 a year to go rent tools? I'm like, what? She says, yeah, we'll work a deal with them so people can just go show up, and then we'll pay for it. Now, you think about that. It's like, holy crap. That would not have happened if we hadn't been talking about it. They love the tool library idea. And because they had the money, they want to spend it on things people in their communities want.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so I have like a complete total ick factor with federal government. Like I'm just pushing against a sponge. But local governments tend to be people that you live next door to.
Yeah.
They tend to be people that care about where they are. And the smaller the town, the more that tends to be true, because you don't get rich being the mayor of Wischestertonville, Idaho, or whatever, right? You're not going to get wealthy off of that. So they're generally people with at least the intent to make their town better. And if you say, well, you have this budget, and if you can put this budget into this, here's a projection of how it will return more back to the community than it takes away. Yeah. Even if they don't say yes, they're at least open to the consideration of that idea. And if other people really, really like it, and then they're like, hey, we want this, then it's really hard to say no to that.
Yeah, especially if they can make it happen, if it's something they can actually do, like Battle Mountain could. Ann Seton jumped in here. She'd like to see more local businesses like the cottage industries, and she's waiting to find the potter to buy the right dishes, right? First of all, thanks for being willing to support a local artist. Bing, bing, bing. Huge win. I want to tell you about the town of Washington, Iowa. They had an old building there. It was a J.C. Penney's building. So you know how big those were back in the day, in a brick building, couple of floors. I mean, you can see this image, right? Sat empty for, 10, 20 years, long time. And a group of women got together and said, let's figure out how to fill this up with small businesses. Let's figure out how to do that. So they just went in and made a deal with the owner and said, you know, we want to do this. Sorry. Boy, I'm going to figure this out before we're all done. I'm going to stop looking at
just
the screen
ignore
and just
the
look
comments
at you, Jack.
If I bring them to your attention. I'm jacking right. with the audience here.
All right. There you go. So they created a place with shared spaces. So it's one open location, and the size of the spaces range from a small table, a woman that was selling jewelry wanted to see if she had a good idea, to a back wall that's filled with books, somebody selling books. And they all work together, run, I think, a common register. They figured out how to run that. Square does some cool things. And several of those businesses have grown and moved into their own empty buildings in the community. So we call that utilizing shared spaces, giving people the opportunity to try things out. Because you can't afford to buy the building. You know what it costs to buy an empty yeah. building and then rehab it. Because you got to bring it up to code and put those damn fire sprinklers in, you know? Washington, Iowa, shared spaces. One of my favorite stories. And it's still in existence.
We lost about 5 seconds on you there. You just went quiet. So I think we missed something really important. You were talking about the building, and then it wasn't your fault. It was just an internet thing, and we lost probably 10 seconds in there where we didn't hear you.
So I was talking about shared spaces in this empty building, and then they filled it. They had many different kinds of vendors in there, and several of those vendors continue to go on and buy or rent another building downtown. So they move from this little tiny test idea into their own building because they've tried it out. They've checked it. Yep.
No, ignore that. Just go.
Okay. And I forgot what I was talking about. Anyway, that's called shared spaces, and it's one of the concepts that we talk about a lot, because the important thing, that's where your entrepreneurs are going. You give them an opportunity to try their idea out. Will this work? I don't know if it'll work, but I can't afford to buy a building. I can work out of my garage and try to sell stuff online, or you could try a shared space, and then you guys can work together to do your marketing and, you know, have your money really go somewhere instead of your $100 that you spend once a month and it kills you. You could partner with five other people and spend $500 and it really works.
Yeah, I think there's just so much to be gained from that cooperative nature of things. And I think there's more people open to it than people realize. That's kind of what I hear you saying, that there's a lot of resources there and people simply don't see them as resources. Other people, other opportunities, other tools. There's a lot of people that have things that aren't being used and they don't want to get rid of them. But they don't want to even sell them, but they wouldn't mind if somebody else used them and they could at least monetize them in some way, or that they could see a result. Maybe they don't even need money. They just would see a result come from them.
You know, you can't leave buildings need love. You can't let them sit empty for too long, because just like humans, they'll fall apart if you don't get in motion. When I was chamber director, we had a couple of empty buildings and I knew the owner of the building. And I went to her and I said, Connie, listen, I want to use your two buildings as incubator spaces. And she looked at me and said, what is that, Deb? It's like, okay, we want people that have an idea that are going to come into your building. First 3 months of rent are free, reduce rent the rest of the year, and they pay utilities. So it's an opportunity for them to try their idea out. The chamber's going to help with marketing. And the Small Business Development Center will help them write business plans in case this takes off where they need it to. And she said, fine, the buildings are empty anyway. Let's use them. So one was an old restaurant. And the Mexican grocery store across the street, huge location, wanted to open their own restaurant in the back. But they were saving for that commercial hood, which 90 grand, some crazy number to get those things, right?
That stuff's very expensive.
Yeah, so they took advantage of the old restaurant. And what it did, they got to test hours to see which hours worked for them. They got to train their staff. They got to try different recipes. Who in this community is going to eat our food and what do they want? And today they have their own restaurant in the back of their store, and it's wildly successful because they tested all their ideas out where they could, and it didn't cost them an arm and a leg. Another woman bought stuff, shoes and stuff that kids, 20 and 30 year olds, like clothing and hats and shoes,
okay,
in Chicago, and took one of the spaces, it used to be an old bridal salon, and made it into a retail store. That first year for her was unbelievable. The second year she stayed another year was even fantastic. She ended up buying the building next door and converting it into her store, bigger her store, and renting out two spaces. So it's an opportunity to try those ideas out and see if they work. The owner's happy because somebody's in their building paying the utilities, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the person trying it has a lot less worry about, am I spending, I don't have this money to do this, what am I thinking, you know, that kind of worry.
Yeah.
And then if you were not successful, because there was one couple, a young woman and her mom, that was doing a thrift store. And after 3 months, they left with everybody's money.
Hmm.
Thank God it was only 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, shit happens. Sorry. Yeah. But that really is the case. And it was a thrift store, so it wasn't lots of big money.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, we learn, one of the things we learned is we can help vet as a chamber. We could help vet these possible entrepreneurs because a background check would have told us they'd done this before.
Yeah. And I'm also, my technical mind is going, I can fix this with technology. I won't go into it because that'd be an hour long explanation, but we can develop a payment system that prevents that from happening. Like, there are ways to handle that. It's just because you had that problem, the next person that implements your solution knows to hedge against that outcome. Like you said, a background check alone, but then if you add into it some sort of a technology feature that prevents that money from disappearing, if that personally, okay, you can leave, but you're not taking Bill's money with you, right?
Right.
Then we've even mitigated it further, right? And this is why it's required that people be willing to take some level of risk, because if you don't, you don't discover those things. Instead of sitting around going, well, what if something goes wrong? Well, why don't we figure out what's going to go wrong and then adjust course as we go downriver, right? Like that's how all exploration has always worked through the history of humanity. Someone has to go first.
Yep, somebody's got to go first, and we're taking small steps. We're not taking giant steps, right?
Mitigate the loss by reducing the potential loss. Like if the loss is only X, then it can't be X plus 10.
Right.
Gotcha. That's really cool. And you're kind of hitting on now, but there's a lot of ways then a lot of this can be done without a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Absolutely. So this woman that went to Chicago and bought stuff, she had a budget and she'd been saving for it. So she was ready for that, right? For that business. The same with the restaurant across the street, because they already had another business that was working. There was a young man that moved from, I love this story too, that moved from another small town to our town because his clients were all there. He was a barber working out of another barber shop. So he had the ability to take advantage of one of those empty buildings. And the only thing he had to bring was his tools that he already had and had to get a chair, and somebody gave him the chair. And he now sees his clients there. He's added on to the building to have things like gaming and a pool table and, you know, stuff for people to do while they're waiting for their person to get their hair cut. And it's because his initial investment was not big. It was the cost of a chair, frankly. And somebody believed in him enough, was getting their hair cut from him. That building owner was getting their hair cut from him and said, oh, you should come here. I got an empty building. Let's figure out what to do with it. And it worked.
So if somebody out there wants to get started with something like this, kind of what would their first steps be?
So I need a little stronger example, a type of business. What are they thinking?
How about somebody here that's being negative? Tell me the type of business you want to start that you don't think you can. How about that? We get one of you guys, and we have about a 10-second lag on that before an answer.
Okay. Well, back to Ann with the pottery. The pottery people would be a perfect fit. That cottage industry would be perfect in a shared space. So finding the potters, they're everywhere. They're easy enough to find in any state. So having them come and set up in this shared space would be great. And maybe they can sell some of their stuff there. Somebody runs the space and they just replenish their stuff so that they don't have to be there every day. That could be part of the deal, I think.
Okay.
And she's going to look on Etsy, and she's going to look on Kickstarter, Indiegogo. There's lots of places where you can look to find your entrepreneurs. And I keep saying Kickstarter and Indiegogo because there's people out there serious. They're raising funds to do the work they want to do. Well, go get them and help them. Get them into a place where they can start their business. Why not?
So, I mean, here's an example, though, of maybe you're in the wrong location for the business, or maybe not. I don't know. But Amy says acupuncture, the challenge is to gain clientele from zero. Well, if you're in kind of a very rural market, you may not be surrounded by people that are even open to that particular thing. So you may need to come up with some other on-ramp to build that component of the business, because I would say this is true of any business where somebody puts their hands on you, especially if you don't have the facade of protection of the state under, like, you know, this person has a medical license, right? That's a little bit different. But anything that's kind of independent and outside of that, before anybody lets you put your hands on them, you have to build trust. And if you're telling somebody's not familiar with acupuncture, you want to stick needles in their body, well, maybe they're not really open to that. And you don't even get that. See, one of the problems, we had some stuff here about why people don't let their business be buildings be used because they prefer to have the loss because it benefits them due to regressive tax policy. You might want to cover your ears for a second, ma'am. That's bullshit. That is not a thing. Yeah. People do not benefit by losing money on paper. On paper, yes, but in real loss, it is, yes, your tax will go down. So does your profit. So does your money. Nobody is intentionally losing money by holding onto a building. This is a myth, and it needs to die a horrible death, right? Especially now that we live in a place where you don't even get to deduct the interest off of it anymore. Stop saying that, because all you're doing is talking yourself out. I'm sorry, you've not experienced this Jack Spirico before. All you're doing is talking yourself out of an opportunity because you don't want the opportunity. In reality, you want to talk about the opportunity, not have it. And I'm talking specifically to one person over there in the chat right now, and you know who you are. I challenge everybody in this audience listening to me right now that wants to get anything done. I don't care if it's like we're talking about today or anything else in the world. Shut your brain and your mouth and your ears to negativity for 30 days. You're not allowed to think a negative thought about what you're trying to do. You're not allowed to speak it. You're not allowed to write it. You cannot say anything negative and report back to me in 30 days. And there'll be one person out of 1,000 that hears that that'll do it, and they'll tell the success story that you want to hear. I'm sorry, Deb. These people wind me up sometimes. That's just who I am.
Not a problem. Let me answer Amy. I have an answer.
If you didn't want a hammer, don't stick your head up like a nail in this environment. I'll tell you that, right?
Let me answer Amy.
Because we had a lot of young people in the audience, too. They're not all crusty old people like me.
Or me.
And I think they have been fed so much negativity. That's why this happens. And that's why occasionally I give that performance, because I want it, like, something has to break this cocoon of negative that people have enveloped themselves with. And what we end up with is some form of what we call toolbox fallacy. Well, I would do this, but before I can do the thing, I need these other things first. And no, you don't. You need to do what you said at the beginning. You take a little piece and you do something, and then you build from that, and you get moving, and you build momentum. And so what would your advice be to young people? Because they're the ones that are going to benefit the most from this. Like, I put myself in the category of the Greek proverb of, I'm now an old man planting trees under whose shade I know I will never sit. And that's how a society goes great. But I want the young people to plant more trees and put more shade out there for everybody else.
So, Amy specifically, go find yourself a local beautician, just a one-chair beautician. Offer to give her acupuncture. Explain what it is. Have a good conversation. Do it over beer, drinks, whatever. Give her acupuncture. Take pictures along the way. She's going to feel fabulous because that is great stuff. And see if she'll have let you set up in her salon. She might have an extra room. So you can start. That's a small step. And because you've given her the experience, she's a hairdresser, she is going to talk about it. So find the people that can be first. Who else would be good to give the experience of acupuncture to? How about your preacher's wife? Try that. It doesn't have to be famous people or, you know, the ones leading the community. Find the people that are involved in the community. The everyday Joes like you and me. I promise you come to me and you give me acupuncture. I like it. It's going to be all over the internet because that's what I do. There are other people like me. Figure out how to try it out in a small step. Make your prices reasonable. Test them out. Don't go crazy. Sit down and figure it out. You need some help? That's what your friends are for. That's what your associates are for. Get together and just simply say, Amy, say, you know I do acupuncture and I want to start this business. Here's my idea. What do you think? And go through it. And somebody's going to say, okay, I know you have to have some tax forms or something. We need to talk to so-and-so. They can help with that. Somebody else is going to say, I know two beauticians that have an empty room. You can do both of them. Let's figure that out. I'll connect you with them. So you're building, with the help of your friends, a business that people are going to definitely want. And don't think that people in rural communities don't want acupuncture. That is a fallacy because they do. We are best known for original ways to deal with things. You think of the Quakers, you think of the Amish, you think of the old farmers, you think of the Germans that immigrated here that came with all their own special formulas to do stuff. There are lots of people that want to go natural and do this kind of thing. And acupuncture is natural. It's not taking pills. It's trying something different.
Well, and we live in a different world. Like when I said what I said, I'm thinking of Pottsville or Minersville, Pennsylvania in 1985. We didn't have this thing called the internet. There's a lot more awareness of this now. There's a whole movement that way. And when you were talking about like a beautician or something, the word that popped right into my head when you said that was chiropractic.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
There's almost no town of any size without a chiropractor or three in it. And that is a natural thing. And then most doctors of chiropractic are good business people, or they don't stay in business long because they can't plug into an insurance funnel of money where they're just guaranteed, you know, once I'm in the Aetna PPO, I'm going to get a certain amount of patients. They have to actually run a business. So as you establish and grow a business, you learn real quick that the easiest way to grow my revenue is to grow my offering to my existing clientele. And if I can bring in an acupuncturist and a masseuse, and I can take 10% off the top in return for giving them space, I've just increased my revenue at no real expense. And I've increased my offering, and I'm bringing in more people who might end up on my chiropractic adjustment table because they came in because it was the only acupuncturist in town. And now the negative, there's you know, only one, becomes the positive.
You know, we call that cross-pollination.
Yes.
Because that's how it's working. And a coffee shop up in Minnesota, a little tiny town. So it had one entrance and the coffee shop was over on this side and it was empty on the other side, but they only had one entrance. So the entrance where you could come in. So the coffee shop, as smart as they were, they went to a local photographer who was fabulous, but worked from his home and said, can you take that wall and fill it with pictures that you've taken? We want to help promote you. Can you put that up on that wall? And we'll help with pickup. So when you have packages done and somebody needs to come pick it up, we'll make that possible to happen here. Talk about a win-win. First of all, this photographer was word of mouth. That's the only way he was doing work, and he needed some more clients. So by having these amazing photos up on the wall, that the coffee shop people said, have you seen so-and-so's photos over there? Look at that one with the flag. That's pretty cool. A conversation that you have making somebody's coffee, right? That was great cross-pollination. And you can do that with any kind of business. Think about your insurance company that, you know, you got to walk 20 feet when you get in there before you get to a desk. What can you do with that front 20 feet of the room? Can you make that a little area for some co-working? I don't know. What could you do with that tiny little space there? Look around you. How much room do you have in your building? And if you're growing food, vertical food, by the way, I saw this article on a community in Japan that they were growing their vertical food. That's how they were doing all their gardening. Man, we need to do that. We need to do that. I mean, think about it. You could do that in an office. You could do, I mean, I was in Colorado and they were doing it with lettuce, different kinds of lettuce, growing it vertical in a greenhouse.
Yeah, I mean, the cross-pollination thing has a lot of potential. If you put a coffee shop in, make a little corner for people to play music, let them start out playing for tips, right? Like, just the space is there. There's a sign-in sheet. Maybe you go, okay, play me 30 seconds to make sure that they don't sound like they're killing a duck or something. But as long as they're reasonably decent at what they do, or you're not in like a coffee shop full of old coal miners like where I was from and the guy's doing like ghetto rap, as long as we're not in that, let people come showcase their talent. You have no idea what that might actually bring, because Bill's three friends that he has from high school come to see him. Well, now they're in your shop. Now, they only showed up because Bill was there playing. Like, and you have to start thinking about, like you say, the possibilities.
Yeah.
Right? What are the possibilities? One of the reasons I kind of went off with this negativity thing is people will talk themselves out of a possibility before they discover the possibility. So one of the things I have, like, a swear word to me is not one of the words that I'm not supposed to say on television or radio. It would be can't. Can't is a not just a bad word, it's a profane word in our home, unless it's something like I can't not do something, right? Like, so when you do that, you're telling your mind and the background process in your mind, don't work on this, right? You're saying, I don't want you to do this because there's no point to it. And so the mind, this background process, like a computer running RAM in the background, is like, okay, this isn't worthy of the energy because the chief programmer said not to do it. And so the second you get there, the question has to always be, how can I?
Well, and that's more of a reflection on you. The chief programmer says it won't work. And you say, okay, well, that won't work. Where's your confidence? Where's your self-acceptance? Yeah. Where's your inhibition? Where's all of that? Because if you're negative, Mr. Negative, nothing will work, no matter what you try. But if you start believing in trying things and the possibilities, and every time somebody, you know, that negative thought hits you, you know, that can't hit you, ask yourself, why won't it? What could I do to make that work? What small thing could I do to make that work? And who might help me? I don't have to do this alone. I got friends. And if you don't have friends, start getting friends and do things together. We're getting on that touchy-feely part of the interview, aren't we?
Yeah. I'm hard, but I'm also, I believe in the energetic reality of the world, the universe, and the mind.
Yeah,
and energy. And we are way more capable than we've convinced ourselves that we are. And a lot of the things we're talking about doing that seem so hard are actually really easy compared to other things the same person's already done. That, you know, when you get somebody that's like, let's say, a veteran, and they've been through all the heck that comes with that life, and then they tell you they can't do a thing that really is like going to talk to five people. I know you can do that. Do you need me to yell at you like I'm your sergeant to get you? Because I'll do it, but I really don't want to. I want you to take over that command position for yourself.
And you have to paint the picture that way.
Yeah.
Because they understand that. That's a motivation thing. That's for you to find out what somebody's motivation is to do something. And if they need to be like they're back in the service again and in charge, then do that. Because we need more of that. Do that.
Public art is something I've got in your notes. You led off with talking about murals. I think that actually can be a huge revitalization into a town. Can you kind of talk about that a bit?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So some of my favorite public art is done on silos out in rural communities. Fort Dodge, Iowa is one. There's another one in South Dakota. Really should be Centerville, South Dakota, where the entire side of the silo is painted. In Fort Dodge, they use local people. So there's a guy in his bib overalls, a farmer. There's a young person. And you can see them from miles and miles and miles away. So, but it was expensive. That wasn't cheap. So that had to come with grant writing. That had to come with fundraising. And for me, that's not the place I want to start, right? That's not where I want to start. Mm-hmm. We had a community development person that had read about University of Iowa had some artists that wanted to come do some arty things in a small town, some arty things. Who knows what the arty things were? They ended up taking a building where the second story was empty and had boarded up windows over it. There was retail on the bottom. They took the measurements for those boarded up windows. One of those artists painted a paint by number scene on it.
Okay.
Out to the fairgrounds, and anybody over 2 weeks could go out and paint these scenes. So I think there were 6 or 8 pictures, and they all represented something of the history of the community. The doodlebugs were invented there. 2 Pulitzer Prize winners. I mean, there was some really cool stuff. What made it different, it wasn't the typical sepia colors. It was bright orange and bright pink and lime green, beautiful, beautiful colors representing our history. And then they put them back up. And that cost the community nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. They had worked with this University of Iowa that was working on a project. Nothing.
Boy, that sounds better than commissioning some artist that nobody knows to paint some stuff that nobody knows what it is. Nothing. Or to put in a $100,000 weird, non-meaning sculpture like is down in Clear Fork, where there's some beautiful restaurants and all down there. But I walk past this sculpture and I go, I consider myself pretty switched on to a lot of different things. I have no idea what it is, what it's supposed to represent. The artist's name is like 17 syllables. I don't know him or her. I don't care. Like, there's nothing grounded there. But what you just described was for the community, of the community, and by the community.
And the community, yep.
That is.
So there's this organization. It's.
Well, and hold on just a second. Just for everybody out there, there's not one of you that can't do that.
All of you can do that.
There's nothing about what she just said that is in any way difficult. And some of you that are trying to skin your other problems, maybe if you did something like that, it would actually lead you to how you can develop. Like, one of the common things here is getting more business or getting more opportunity, right? Well, it turns out that people that do really cool things for their community, they ingratiate themselves with that community. The community wants to give back to them. You don't even have to ask at that point. You're literally like, don't do it. And they're still going to do it. In fact, the more you tell them not to, the more they will.
Yeah.
And it's just how humans work. It's reciprocity, especially when not expected.
You know, it's placemaking, and placemaking creates tourism, and tourism is economic development. You bring people to your community, they're going to spend money. And this is what you want. You want more business in your community? Start by placemaking. Do some cool shit. Stuff. Fortepan. Fortepan is this procedure where you can upload your old pictures and the historical pictures from 20s, 30s, 40s, upload them. And then they have this project where they make a big printing that you put on an empty window that if you do it on the inside, it's going to last forever. If you do it on the outside, the weather will bring it down. No big deal. It's paper, and you put it up with glue. It's the coolest project that I've seen in a long time. It's a great way to get our history recorded. with these old pictures. And any community can do this. If you just Google Fortepan, you'll find out what you need to see about it. I know a community that did that to two windows. And people drove from hundreds of miles to go see those pictures. One was a group of little kids playing jacks on the street. And for somebody like me that played jacks as a kid, I thought that was really cool. For my grandchildren who had no idea what jacks were, it was an opportunity for me to talk to them and share about my life as a child. This is bringing community together across age. And you want to think about doing that kind of thing, too. Everybody should work together.
And finding problems. Problems are the opportunities.
Yeah,
no definitely. One pays anybody to do something if there's not a problem on the other side of it, even if it's a minor problem. So, you know, I look at a lot of the situations, these older people that are retired, they don't have a lot of money, but they're just getting by. And then you got all these people paying someone for daycare. Hello? Right? Like, you know, they're better at caring for kids than grandmas.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you know, and especially if they don't have to, like, my father-in-law's girlfriend, after his wife passed away, she spent like the last working years of her life working in a daycare center. It is very thankless work. It's very low paying work, and it's very hard, long work that was hard on her at that age. But I can tell you, I know the person she was, and if she did it for 2.5 hours a day, 4 days a week, she would have loved it.
Yep.
It turns out you can load share things when the person's not doing it only for income. You know, if they're otherwise okay, but it's extra money, and now the other side of it is the person's not taking advantage of it. Like the whole volunteer, the problem with volunteers, this is why I don't, like the very first real world event that I ever did, I did volunteers for some of my staff. Like they don't work, right? And you can't say, hey, go take the garbage out like now because, well, they're a volunteer, but when they're working and they're on the clock, then we'll go take the garbage out or whatever it is. So I think if something is of value, then some value should be returned for it, whether it's monetary or barter or whatever. But there's, you know, my business head is spinning off 20, 30 different ideas for businesses right now in any one of these scenarios, starting with one, right? Like the people like me, the biggest thing I have to do is, no, you don't have time for all that. You got to do this stay in your lane type thing and hand that off to somebody else. And it that's why I get frustrated when I hear all the, well, you can't like, then how did all the people that did do? Cause not every successful business is employing 50,000 people and on NASDAQ, right? Most businesses are 1 to 20 people and they're doing $100,000 to $3 million in business. That's the average business that runs the economy is that business right there. There's, for every one Walmart, there's 10,000 businesses like that.
Well, and they don't want to grow. They're happy.
I don't want to grow.
Where they're at. They don't want to grow.
No, I
and growth can look differently. You know, you bring in interns that would be, and pay them because interns should be paid. They're doing work, right?
Agreed.
But bring in interns, kids out of high school or kids still in high school, to experience what the real world is like and what it is to work in the real world. Cause we skip that education part for some reason. They don't know how to manage a bank account. There's like a ton of stuff that we learned and they haven't learned. So we need to jump in and make those kind of things possible. And let's get on the right track. I'm preaching now. Let me come back to center here.
Now preach. People love it.
Well, it's important, you know. Do we need long handwriting? No, because the kids will take that phone and take a picture of it, and it'll tell them what it says. And I had a superintendent of a school tell me that because I was complaining, well, how can you know we're not going to learn? We're going to lose all this experience. He said, no, we're not. Those kids already know how to find out what it says. We don't need to teach them. They don't need to know it. It's not what they look at. Come into the present. Come here. You can take your phone. The phone will tell you what it says.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. And his point was, I have to choose where we spend our money. And teaching that doesn't make sense in our today's society. There are other things that we need to teach that make a lot more sense. people need to know how to use computers, that need to know how to do those kind of really cool things, how to build apps, how to do all that kind of stuff. Because Generation Z, they know. They're born knowing it, right?
Yeah. Zoomers, and then we got the alphas coming behind them, and they're running out of. That's going to make the next generation beta. We might have to change this way that we're naming these things. X started it, I guess. And that's me. I'm an Xer. We're built different.
So
I don't give a damn attitude about everything, but I'm going to do what I need to get done. I was thinking when you said volunteers, like I think pay your interns. I just had a cool idea. I think as long as I could get people to come apply, I would advertise it as an unpaid internship. And then when you select your interns, tell them, oh, you're getting minimum wage. We just didn't tell you that, because then you've got a mission-oriented person who's going to look at the payment as very valuable because they were willing to do it without being paid, right? Like that is one way to – now, if you get no one to show up, you might have to advertise your payment. But if you can get people to show up to work for free and you pay them, and I'll tell you guys that are interviewing for jobs, my first big sales job, the way I got it was the guy asked me that question they always ask you at the end, why should I hire you? And I said, because I want to do this, and because I want to do this, I'll be good at it. And I had an offer letter about 2 hours after I walked out of the office.
Yeah, of course you did.
Because that is an answer nobody gives.
Yeah.
I'll be good at it because I want to do it. But you will. If you really want to do something, you will. If you actually want to do something, you're not just talking about it. You want to do it. You will figure it out. Like when people talk about education, I say that humans learn what they need to learn when they need to know it, especially now. Like you were talking about computers and the internet, AI, all this technology. There's nothing you can't learn how to do.
Nope.
There's nothing you can't. So do you really want it? And if I find when someone is in this place talking about a thing, but they won't do it, they probably don't really, what they really need to do is focus on what you do want.
Absolutely. Which is why I ask people in communities, what do you want?
Yes.
And let's work on that. And the volunteer thing, don't make people volunteer for 3 years to serve on a board somewhere.
No.
Do volunteering by project. We have this event coming up, or we have this educational thing coming up. Can you help with that? You are going to get more yeses as an organization than if you do that whole committee thing. Because committee, kill them. Just kill the committees. They're useless.
Committees for ideas going to die.
That's good.
No, it is.
Remember that one. Yeah, that's good.
If you have a board or you have a small government body or something, and you bring them an idea and they want to appease you, but they don't want to do it, they create a committee for it. Right. And if they really want to appease you, they create a blue ribbon committee for it. But that just means it's never coming back. That's all. It will go in there like a toilet bowl and circle and down the drain.
Down it goes.
You know, you got to go make things happen. One of the things I was really impressed with your TEDx is that you were talking about filling empty buildings. And I really have driven across this country a lot. And I've seen a lot of them. I've seen some beautiful buildings. Again, that part where you had your hands up or somebody had their hands up, that one building, it was either Mississippi or Missouri or whatever. I said, imagine the possibilities. That resonated with me.
It was actually Natchez.
Right? Those are assets being wasted.
They that's Natchez, Mississippi, and they do an empty buildings tour every year. They call it Imagine the Possibilities because it works, you know, and we talked about the empty buildings tour, you know. I know it works. It's just something every small town should do. What you want to look at is what is your involvement? So what are the building codes in your community? Now, I know I'm getting into that city kind of thing here.
Yeah.
But stay with me.
Okay.
Because if we had appropriate building codes and we had, for example, empty buildings register, where when your building goes empty, you have to put it on the register. And if it's not rented or sold within X amount of months, you have to pay a fine. The fire department comes in every 6 months and inspects empty buildings because it is a hazard to have an empty building. So the fire department comes in and inspects it. Those are things that we can insist upon as residents of a community. Why aren't you doing this? this is what you get paid to do. This is your job. Keep our empty buildings full and start by holding people accountable. You know, the guy that has a building that is full of junk, and I mean junk, crap, whatever, and doesn't even have curtains on the window. You can look right in and see it. I always tell people in the town, go clean his windows and sweep the sidewalk in front of it. And I mean really clean the windows. Do it like a ninja. Do it at night when nobody can see you doing it. Because what happens, people the next day, oh, wow, that looks really nice. What are they doing over there? Phone calls are made to the building owner saying, what are you doing over there? I see your windows are clean. Hey, what's going on? So they're stirring the pot a little bit, or you are if you're cleaning the windows. It's an opportunity to get people talking about that particular building. And now you can go to the owner and say, you know what, we have this event coming up and we've got some posters we need to hang. Do you mind if we put them in your windows? We'll put them on the outside that first year.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they cover those windows. So it looks like something, right? And it's a local event or opportunity or, you know, this building could be the next barbershop kind of thing, right? And then the following year, find out, was he a football player back in 1945? What, you know, what is his reason for thinking about the past? And how can that motivation get him to let go of that building? Maybe have the building named after him or a park named after him? Maybe to use the building and name the business after him? Whatever it takes, right? Ask him, can you use the first 6 foot of that building?
Yeah.
You'll clean it out. You'll hang curtains. But you just want to use the first 6 feet of that building. You can do retail in 6 feet. You can absolutely do retail in 6 feet. You can do acupuncture in 6 feet. Not that you want to do it with the window not covered, but you see where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah.
You can set up a table there and put a thing around it. You can do all kinds of cool stuff. Your local artist could display art in that 6 feet. It doesn't have to be for sale. It can just be something in the window that looks great. Again, you're starting to let the building know. You're bringing that energy in that we're going to take care of you. This has to be, we have to do something with this building. We cannot let it rot. And then the city on the other side, hold people accountable. For God's sakes, just hold them accountable.
Yeah.
I don't care. You know, there's that line of, it's my building and I can do what I want with it.
Yeah.
No, you live in the community. You're a member of our community. And as a community, we have decided that we're going to take care of our community. And you belong to the community. Help us out here. Or let us help you out here. We're not taking the building away from you. Although if you don't take care of it, we will.
Some of these buildings are legitimate hazards. You're hitting on my inner libertarian in a negative way to a degree, but I also see your point because that building is housing rats. That building is a fire hazard.
It's a health hazard.
That building is an attractive nuisance under common law that if a child breaks into it and hurts themselves, their parents can sue you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, what I just said there, that's pretty much – when I say common law, I mean because it's absorbed across the board in almost every place in the country that if you have something like that and you're not providing a reasonable expectation to keep children out of it, if they harm themselves with it, you can be held liable. Whether it should be that way or not, I don't know, but it is, right? And I think maybe, like, the word that came to my head was backfeed, that doesn't even necessarily need to be that in their face, but if you had like your town council or whatever asking somebody, well, what are you doing with that building, Bob? Just that alone might make them think, well, maybe I need to do something with the building. I'm not for taking people's property under any circumstances, but when I see these buildings sitting there empty, I actually know that everybody would benefit, including the property owner, from something being done with that building, even if it were the city to buy it. But that'd probably be the least of my favorite outcomes.
Yeah, and that's the last.
Hands much better.
Yeah, that's the last of the outcomes you want.
Yeah.
But there are people that own buildings that had good intentions and just ran out of money.
Yeah.
And money or time or something. Help them find out what it is they wanted to do with it and come together and figure out how to make that happen.
There's also a lot of people that own buildings that they don't have any stake in it. They were unable to sell it. They inherited it and they had no stake in it. And because of its condition, because of the state of the town, they can't get rid of it. But they think someday it might be something, so they don't want to sell it too cheap. So they'll just sit there. And I think we had somebody in the comments talking about how they've talked to building owners, and they'll say something like, I'm just keeping it for the tax laws. That is, I did business heavily like this for 20 years. That is, I don't want to talk to you right now, and I'm saying words to make you go away. That's when you come to somebody like me and go, I got this great business opportunity, and I go, where's your business plan? And they don't have one. I don't actually really put a lot of stake into your business plan, like all your KPIs and stuff. Like, you know, what I'm saying is I don't have time for you right now. I don't want to talk to you. So I'm going to ask for something I know you probably don't have. And then you're going to go away. And so when you're in that situation, you have to actually figure out the person you're speaking to. What is the real objection? And the real objection in this situation, just guessing, is most likely, I think something bad will happen because I give you this opportunity. And so what that person needs is a reassurance that nothing worse than what you already have will be the result of it. Like, so one of the persons was saying, like, I go in very honestly and say straight up, I don't have business experience. Don't do that. Okay, I appreciate your honesty. Sell your vision. That's and right. Sell your vision in a low risk way to that person, and also determine their underlying motivation. Saying to somebody, well, we could lease the building, would work with a person that's really money-minded if the number's big enough. But there's people that's not the real motivation with that building. It's just some boat anchor that their uncle left them or whatever. Like, what do you care about? And find what they care about. And then at least they'll listen to you, and then maybe you can uncover the real reason for the holdup. Because most of the initial no's you will get in the world, whatever the reason is not the actual reason. It's your job to pull the thread gently until the real reason comes out. Because if you give me a reason and it's not the real reason, and I give you a perfect response to that fixes your problem, it didn't do anything because it wasn't the problem, right? I'll make your foot stop hurting, but if your back's what actually hurts, you don't care what I said. I don't know why that's hard for people to grasp, but I think we're just used to losing.
Yeah.
Right? We're used to losing in the world, and We usually, like, we're binary. Like, we went and we did a thing, and we won or we lost. Okay, we lost, we'll go do something else. Where sometimes, if it's worth doing, you have to make a few runs at it before you're going to get there.
You know, our movie theater closed my first week on the job.
Yeah.
It really pissed me off. Anyway, building.
Hey, there's motivation. Find the thing that pisses you off that would be better if it was back.
And now you're motivated
to do that. This meant
absolutely
something to you.
And so a group of us just got together and said, we've got to save the movie theater. How are we going to do this? The building itself had gone back to the bank, and it was Wells Fargo. I don't mind saying who it was.
Yeah.
So people were calling Wells Fargo. They weren't returning the phone calls. They were trying to find out, you know, how to buy this building. And there was a sign that they wanted, I think it was $40,000 for the building, which wasn't a bad price, frankly. But they never returned calls. I'm like, I got this. Hold on, guys. I got this. I'll take care of this. I looked up the top marketing executive for Wells Fargo out in San Francisco, got the email address, got his gatekeeper's email address as well, because they're the ones that stopped the phone calls, his secretary, whoever is his gatekeeper, right? And I sent them a note. First, I left a voicemail, and then I sent them the message, too. I'm like, so here's my name, and this is what I do, and I work with rural communities, and you have this building for sale, and I really don't want to talk bad about Wells Fargo, but you guys don't return your phone calls. You don't give us an opportunity. Now, if you want me to go to the Internet, hey, I'm game, and I know thousands of people that'll share this story. Do you know I got a call the next day? And they donated half the cost of the building. So we only had to pay $19,000 for it. Because I found the right, that was their motivation. That you can't. It's Wells Fargo. We got enough bad press already.
Yeah.
We don't need any more.
Yeah.
And that worked. Yeah. That worked. And by the way, we did save the theater, raised over $250,000, and 2 years later, it was open and running.
And probably better than it was.
Yeah, it was. Hired people to work there instead of making volunteers, because we believe in economic development.
Yeah, when I was 16, if I had an opportunity to work at a small little movie theater like that, I would have done it for money. If you had asked me to do it as a volunteer, I would have went out into the woods and drank Yingling with my friends.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, you know, like, people follow incentives, and one of the biggest problems we have, and this is a larger problem, but one of our biggest problems in society today is we have perverse incentives. So people are going to go where they're led by incentive, and if the incentive is, well, don't do anything, they won't do anything. If the incentive is eat food that makes you sick, fat, and tired, they're going to eat food that makes you sick, fat, and tired. And then any other incentives out the window because they have no energy left to pursue it anymore. This is the problems we have are embarrassingly simple in our ability to solve them that we don't do it. Right. Like, and that doesn't mean that everybody's going to be able to just go out and completely revitalize any town that they try to do. But it certainly means that any town you try to revitalize, there's a possibility you could do it if you'll give it a real go, if it's important enough to you.
You know, start with your block that you live on. And you know what? Take an old chair and put a pot of flowers out there. Plant some flowers and put them on top of the old chair in front of your front door. Start with where you live. One little simple, easy thing. And then let your grandkids draw with chalk on your driveway and have some fun. Make fun pictures. Start making your neighborhood look like a neighborhood. Visit with your neighbor. Go over and say hi. You see them outside weed whacking? Go over and offer to help if they need help. Just talking to people. Get out in the streets. Take your chair. This is what I tell mayors to do because I love it and it works. Take your chair to an empty lot. Show up every Friday at 10 o'clock or whatever day, and it's visit with the mayor day. And just sit there and wait for people to come visit with you. They will come. They will come. They want to see what the hell you're doing out there in an empty chair, right? What are you doing over here, John? I want to see what you want. Have a seat.
That's awesome.
Get off, talk to people, find out what they want. Let's come back to being community again. We have isolated ourselves too much already. You know, if you've got to play games on your phone, do it outside so people can see you. Go to the park and sit at a picnic table with a bottle of ice cold Coca-Cola. Remember those? Oh, they make them in Mexico now and they're so good. You've had one, I'm assuming, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not old enough to remember when Mexican Coke was our Coke.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I'm not old enough to remember when there was cocaine in it, though.
No. I just had regular sugar in it.
Yeah.
We actually, there's a town out called Dublin. It's about 2 hours west of me. And there was an old Dr. Pepper bottling plant out there. And until about 10 years ago, you could still get original Dr. Pepper, you know, which was the same kind of thing with the Coke, right? And now they're like a bunch of different fruit sodas or some shit like that. Somebody took it over. But, I mean, there were people that would literally, like, go out there with a pickup truck and load the back of the pickup truck and then sell it at work for like two times what they paid for it.
And it was still a deal, right? Yeah.
Right? It was still a deal because you can't get it. Like, there was one grocery store that would sell little four packs like the Benny Pony bottles of it. And that was the only place you could get it. And there was, I think it was one of the chicken offshoots that had it for a while in a fountain drink from there. And they were probably a small chain, so they were running out there and getting it. But I just sit there listening to the context of this conversation going, what an opportunity that really was that nobody took. Like, how much could have been done with just that one thing that people were like, and it wasn't just that it tasted different. It was parents telling their kids, this is what I drank when I was your age.
Yep.
You know, you want to see movies that sell out? It's the Star Wars movies, even though the new ones suck, because millennial dads and younger Gen X dads are taking the kids to see the thing that they saw in 1977 10 times, right?
It's
that lineage that we try to bring back, that connection. And just for the people over here in the chat on some of this stuff with the problems you're pointing out, what I always taught my salespeople, if you're not getting enough yeses, you're getting far too few no's, right? A rock star salesperson, I mean, like a top producer is going to close about 10% of the business that they start out seeking in a cold market. That means for every deal, they have 9 no's.
Yep. I was
Don't get 2 no's and complain to me and I will fire you. Right? Like, I will fire you. You need 100 no's to eventually work down a funnel into 10 yeses. And that's if you're a rock star and good at what you do. And when you're new, your percentage might be 3%.
It's hard. Cold markets are hard anyway. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why the numbers are low.
But the exercise I used to do is have everybody stand up in a room, look at each other, tell each other no, and ask anybody if they were bleeding. Are you bleeding? No. Then it didn't hurt to be told no. Go ask. I've never bled because someone told me no. I never folded up in the ball in the fetal position to suck my thumb because somebody told me no. And you won't either. You just have to, like, accept that you're going to get a lot of no's in the world. And that's totally okay.
You know, I always say it's just a no for right now.
Yes.
Because
a lot of no's become yeses in time.
Yeah.
Right. You're talking about restoring these buildings. You know, to me, if you can get one building, you can get most of them. Mm-hmm. Because the guy that said no is like, well, what, why isn't anybody, you know, doing anything with my building? Why is Bill's and Tom's building looking so cool now? And 'cause they didn't know what it could be, right? They didn't understand what it could become.
You didn't paint the picture for them well enough.
Or they won't want to look. You can paint a picture. Sometimes they don't want to look at it, right?
But well, there
when
is
they
that,
see but... it, right, when they really see it happen, it makes me think when I was a little ass kid, there was a TV show called Romper Room. I don't know if you remember that. That's
all
it really gets. And the lady at the end would have the magic mirror, and she'd be like, I see Billy and Susie. And you're sitting there as a little kid going, say my name. And when she said your name, you were like, woohoo. And when she didn't say your name, like, aw. Like, I got a common name, man. What's up? You know, why not me? And that why not me thing is a powerful motivator when people see good things happening for others. They want that for themselves.
Yep.
And a lot of times it is, like you said, they just didn't see it, and you could try to paint it, and you only need a couple people to see it and give it a shot, and then you have to do it. You have to convert it. You have to make it work, and then a lot of the no's will transcend over time.
Yep, absolutely. You have other questions for me?
Let's see. You've got a book.
I do.
Let's talk about that book.
Let me hold it up
for you. It's a workbook, right?
It is.
Would you write it? Why'd you write it? What's your motivation? And what will people learn if they pick it up? And I'll make sure they can get it out of the show notes.
So, if you want to make a difference in your community and you want to create something, but you're not quite sure how to go about it, this book is filled with stories of other towns that have done exactly that. You'll learn the idea-friendly method and how to do it in your community. There are pictures in it so you can see it, nice, beautiful color pictures. There's areas. It's a workbook because I want you to read a section and then write down what you want to do. If you like that idea, then start doing your own idea-friendly method and get started on it.
And we will see.
Oh, why did I write it? Because it was time. This is my work. This is what I do for a living. I work with small towns and help them achieve the things they want to achieve. I don't come in and tell them what to do. I would hate that. Don't come to my town and tell me what to do. But I go to find out what they want, and we work together to make it happen. And these are stories that have happened and how to do them and how easy it is.
I think that what we've done for people today is kind of open their eyes to the fact that what we really see out there is a problem really is an opportunity. I always say every problem is an opportunity. Like, people wonder, are we going to not have any jobs because AI is going to take them all? As long as we have problems, there'll be jobs because jobs are solutions to problems. And we have this on some level, a cancer of the death of small town America. But on the other side of it, like, we are in the best place we could be to change that right now, because we do have all this technology. We do have the capacity for remote work. We do have the capacity for a person in rural Pennsylvania, for instance, to have a business building custom fishing rods and actually do well with it. Like one of the people in my community, or one guy's actually, like, you know, fishing is just in my head now. Like, he builds these things that shoot bait out to the ocean and stuff. Like, And both of those people are working in rural communities where if you said you were going to build a business, and they're employing people too, they're not one man shows. They would say, there's nothing here. Well, you know, everybody I know has an ability to receive stuff in the mail. And if it's a physical product, you can mail it to them with shipping built into the price. And if it's a digital service, like a consulting service, something can be delivered digitally, you are limitless in where you take customers. Your grandparents, right, my grandparents, did not have anything approaching the opportunity we do today. We talk about how much we've lost, and I believe we have lost some things, mainly because of what we call money today. But the reality is we also have more opportunity in more ways than many people, you know, 50 years ago could even conceive of. The ability I built a business with an $18 recorder and a busted ass headset in my car. That's how this show started, right? If I wanted to get into broadcasting in 1985, if I had been 35 years old in 1985 instead of, you know, 2008, then I would have had to go be an intern, schlep coffee for somebody, beg to get on the air at 2 o'clock in the morning, and maybe one day actually get a show, and then maybe get syndicated. Maybe, right? You know, 1% of 1% hit that level in the world of broadcasting. Thanks to Adam Curry and RSS and podcasting, I was able to build a business that, yeah, I was in a giant market, but that's not why I built a business. I built a business because it was weightless, portable, could go anywhere in the world. And everybody that builds a business in these places live. And those people have money and they want to spend it. And they would spend it locally if they could. Nobody wants to drive an hour to the bigger town to go grocery shopping, but they do it because they can't get the stuff they're looking for. Provide them what they want and they'll spend their money there.
And if you don't have a grocery store in your town, start your own and start with a farmer's market and then figure out how to do it inside. And then talk to you, Jack, because you're going to figure out how to do vertical gardening and do whatever it was you told me you want to do with your makerspace.
Yeah.
And share your stories, because that's how we get better at what we do, by listening to what other people have done.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does matter when you say it. There's a guy in our community. He runs a microgreens business. That's what he sells. The little micro foofy food greens that you get on a nice plate. And he's in rural New Hampshire, but he drives to all the bigger towns, to all the high end restaurants. He built that entire business. I mean, he supports his family. He's got a young kiddo now. He's married. He 100% earns his income from that effort. His background was bartending and restaurant management.
God bless him.
And he was able to build this business because he listened to one guest talk about how he did it. And his immediate response was, he's in New Hampshire, but he's really a Bostonian. I can do that shit. Like, I was just like, I can do that shit. If he can do that shit, I can do that shit. And like 6 weeks later, he's selling his first product. And a year later, he's leasing a space because he can't grow it in his basement anymore or whatever. Right. Yeah. That's the power of just being exposed to an idea and saying, I can do that.
I can do that. Yeah.
I can do that. Well, y'all heard what Deb had to say today. There ain't one of you, if you want to do what she's done, can't go do it. There's places crying for this to be done. Deb, tell them how they can learn more about you and your work and tie into your resources.
Yep, absolutely. First of all, let me give you my email. It's Deb, D-E-B, at saveyour.town. Got a funny website, saveyour.town, not .com. Leave the .com at home, .town. And the reason I want you to do take my email is, if you have an idea, you're not quite sure how to get started, or you want to share a good story, email me. I do answer my emails. I want to hear what you're working on. Saveyour.town, my associate, Becky McCray out of Oklahoma, and I'm in Mississippi, we run Saveyour.town. That's our business. And you can find out more than you ever thought possible there. We just finished our biannual 10 years of the Survey of Rural Challenges, and the results are up now. That's something worth looking at. It's, you know, the thing we found out about rural communities, what the big cities say we are not. So, of course, the survey, our results indicate that, too. Got some webinars coming up. There's a free newsletter, all kinds of cool stuff. You can find my book at buildingpossibility.com /buy the book.
Okay.
If you get to buildingpossibility.com, you'll find it
if you want.
Yeah, you'll find it, absolutely. And there's some examples on there and some excerpts and stories and reviews, all the fun stuff. That's what I can tell you right now. If you want me to come to your town, check it out. Go to savior.town and let's visit.
Well, thank you for being with us today, and you've said a lot, and a lot to unpack. I think this will be one of those episodes some people listen to two or three times before they figure out what they want to do with it, and that's always great. I will let people know that right down there in the video notes, if you're watching the video, there'll be a link, and about 30 minutes after this live stream shuts down, the audio will appear on the other side at the Survival Podcast. Links to Deb's sites and to her book and everything else we talked about will be in those show notes for you. So if you're not having time to write stuff down or anything, it'll be there. You won't have any trouble finding it. If you're listening to the audio, which is probably 90% of our market, then all you got to do is go look up episode 3626. And hey, you got a cool pattern for your episode, Deb. Thanks for tuning in with us today and being here.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And thank you for the work you've done, because we need more people doing work like this, and you're proof that people can get it done. And thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
All right, guys, real quick before we sign off, I want to let you know about our item of the day today. You guys know me. One of my big passions in life is cooking. People have asked me before, Jack, if you didn't do a show on preparedness and entrepreneurship and Bitcoin and all this other stuff, what would you do if you had to pick something else to start over? I'd probably do a podcast on cooking. I'm like one step away from being a chef, and I don't want to do that. It's too much work. And I enjoy my time in the kitchen. Cooking isn't something I have to do. It's something I get to do. And so I've taken some time and effort in selecting the tools that I use in my kitchen. And the one I got for you today, this was the second best-selling item at T-Spaz last year. I sold hundreds of these last year, zero complaints. It's an end grain wood bamboo cutting board. And this particular one is the one I settled on. I bought mine back in 2018, and I'm a board addict. Like, when I go traveling and stuff, I come home with new serving boards and cutting boards. But this is the one I use all the time because it just performs so well, and it isn't super pretty, and it costs about $40. Everybody that's bought one of these told me they're surprised at how well it actually performs. And if you don't think a cutting board can actually perform better than another cutting board, because you've never used a good one yet. The end grain is really important. Think of it like a bristle dartboard. Those end grains actually spread just a little bit, and they allow the blade of that knife to fit in that little groove. And that does two things. One, better slicing performance. The other thing, it doesn't dull the crap out of your knife. If you've used a bamboo board in the past and it made your knife dull in like three or four passes, that's because it's a long grain versus end grain. And bamboo's really, really hard. We think of it as kind of soft, but it's super hard. It's harder than most woods. This thing, again, $40. It's got a groove, so like none of that juice and stuff when you're bringing stuff off the grill ends up all over the floor, and you got to call the dog over to lick it up. I really thought they were going to discontinue it because they cut the price. I paid like $65 for mine, and they were that for years. Last year they cut the price, and I'm like, they're going to close it out. I don't know if they changed something up, got more efficient, whatever, because everything else went up in price. This is a deal. I recommend you check it out. If you'll notice, most of the stuff we've talked about this year or this week has been for the kitchen. We'll continue that tomorrow, and then we'll bring you a whole new list of things to make your life a little bit better next week. But remember, no matter what you buy, even if it's not something listed there, you start your shopping at tspaz.com. You help us out. Also consider joining the member support brigade. But as I keep saying this week, don't do it. I'm going to bring you a sale next week. I don't want you to overpay. There's going to be an opportunity also for a few lifetime memberships. I only do that about once a year, and I hadn't done it for like 3 years. So it's unusual that I sell lifetime memberships, but I'll do that probably next week. With that, tomorrow we'll have an expert counsel Q&A show for the week, so we will not be live because I can't have like eight different council members on a live. It's too much to put together and get it done. But I had started last week taking the shows that are not done live and going ahead and making like a still screen video of them, putting them on YouTube. People like that, so I'll keep doing it. I'll probably upload them over to Rumble as well. And then Friday, we'll have a Friday flashback, and then next week, we'll do her all again. Thank you for tuning in today. And for those of you I beat up a little bit, it's only because I love you. And a little tip that I gave out there in text for everybody was, if you're one of these people with these negative things in your life and you're trying to get shit done, and I've used this, I don't have a lot of negative problems anymore. I fixed that when I was a young man. But I do have maybe bad habits or something. And this is something I did. It sounds goofy, but it works. Get a big, thick, heavy-duty rubber band and put it around your left wrist. If you're right-handed, that way, put it opposite wrist. You're offhand, right? And every time you do the thing that you're not supposed to do, grab that rubber band, pull it way out, and smack yourself with it. It's amazing how quick you'll end up like you're going to do or say what you don't want to do, and you look at it and go, oh, no, I'm not doing it. It'll remind you that you're trying to correct a behavior. By the way, a little tip on that, do it with one thing at a time. Correct one problem at a time in your life. You'll be surprised at how quick you can do it and how much you'll move on and improving yourself on the next thing. With that, take care. I'll catch you guys again tomorrow with that expert counsel. Just run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.